Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things, Brian, your host this week and every week, Wrestling Art dude, podcasting dude. I'm here to talk about a match that I loved so darn much. I mean, the entire feud, Sting versus Vader, early 90s WCW, is some of the best stuff you will ever see. But yeah, I got all revved up and jazzed up from you know, all of the Sting retirement things, and I was just going on a big old Sting rewatch, and I just, you know, all right, well, we're gonna talk more about that later. I got special guest Jeremy back on the show to talk all about that, so we'll get into that match in a little bit. In the meantime, we have a little what's been going on in the world of Chris Things, and man, it has been a bloody busy week. I have been just going nuts with all of the things. So started the week, I thought it'd be good timing to line up the release of my latest T-shirt with the big old Sting retirement. So if you haven't seen that, please check out on either, you know, christthings.com.au or on my Instagram. My dressed for the White Castle of Fear shirt. You know, I looked about the marketplace and I did not see enough shirts that let you tell the world how passionate you are about the White Castle of Fear. And as well, about White Castle itself and their delightfully great, yet awful, yet great burgers. I still don't even know whether I enjoy or hate White Castle burgers. But there's a special time, you know, late at night when you've been drinking, where the White Castle sliders, they just hit perfect. So, I don't know. But yeah, check out the shirt. I mentioned last week I did putting together a video for it as part of the release to, you know, hype it up a little bit. I really like some of the different bootleg artists out there get you all jazzed up with a little video, and since this reference is so kind of like based on that moment of WCW Saturday Night, I was like, I need to at least show that footage. So I got my editing shoes on. I guess I was a little bit inspired again from, you know, chatting to IQ Wrestle the other week. And yeah, I got back into a little bit of video editing. Hadn't done that in a long time. So it was actually quite a lot of fun, you know, going through and syncing this video up with some ZZ Top sharp dressed man and intermittent Vader screaming. I think it came out pretty well, so I was pretty happy with that. And yeah, I'm pretty stoked on the shirt. Again, it's probably very niche, the amount of people that remember this obscure moment from WCW Saturday Night from 1993 in the year 2024. That's 31 years old, but, you know, I'm relying on the fact that I think there's others out there that will like the delightful strangeness of it. But so I had that, that shirt go on sale. It seems that people are digging it so far, so that's good. I'm happy about that. Also, I mentioned this last week, there was a wrestling art show. It was a group show at Netherworld that the great guys at Netherworld reached out to me to submit some stuff for this show, and I actually did up a little poster variant for the art show opening night for them as well. I think that was a pretty fun little number. But so I was submitting three paintings for that. So it was kind of cool. It was like a group show, but it was almost like a bit more than a group show, if that makes sense. So if I'm doing three paintings, I kind of have the opportunity to kind of group them together and put some sort of concept that links them together. So I wanted to do something kind of fun from that perspective. So it was almost like a mini solo show in that sense. So I had the idea to, because it was sort of like a celebration of your retro wrestling kind of thing, and I had the idea of, I don't know where the idea came to me from, of having a concept that threads the three paintings together, that there, in the late 80s, there was a mutagen-tainted batch of steroids that resulted in a generation of super mutant freak wrestlers that terrorized professional wrestling and never left it the same again. So I thought that'd be kind of sick, you know. I was thinking of like these big, you know, crazy body dude monsters of the late 80s, like, you know, your Road Warriors, Sting, of course, Ultimate Warrior. You know, the list goes on and on, and I was like, that'd be pretty cool. And I thought, man, I could do a thing where they're kind of like just ridiculously, you know, hulking and vascular, but like bright shining neon green, like to kind of convey the mutant element of it. So I did these three paintings, and I'm actually pretty stoked with how they came out. But initially, earlier in the week, I thought I was working towards a deadline of Sunday being the big Nethermania show. And that's what I originally shared. And then I didn't actually realize that the opening night was Thursday. So this was actually last night. So there was a bit of a mad dash towards that finish line at the end, actually. So I ended up doing one of the paintings over the weekend for the most part, and a little bit into the week, and then I got to the day before the show and I still basically had two paintings to do. And I was like, you know what, I can just crack this out, you know, go back to my man, I was a mad procrastinator in uni, so I kind of like went back to that, did them both in one day, worked quite late till that night. And I think there's something to be said about the energy of just having a mad dash like that, get in that creative zone and just make. You know, I painted for like 10 hours that day and it was so much fun. It was awesome. I wouldn't change a thing. So I don't know if that's something, a little bit of advice out there for my fellow creatives and artists. Sometimes you can really plan something out and, you know, do it in a slow methodical pace. You know what I'm going for there. But something to be said about just doing it with a mad dash feverish approach. So I look forward to sharing those paintings with you in the near future. But if you're in Brisbane, come on by Netherworld and check them out in person for the next few weeks. All right. Let's, I think that's enough of that. Let's throw over to our match of the week. All right, ladies and gents, we're back for our latest match of the week. You got some bloody Sting versus Vader action to talk about with a returning, quite frequent, semi-regular guest, friend of the show, Mr. James Vanderbeek.
You know what? I'm dropping the James Vanderbeek thing. I'm sick of it. My name is Jeremy. Respect me and who I am. No, I don't give a fuck. Hey, everybody, it's Jeremy, James Vanderbeek, whatever. Thanks for having me, Chris.
You're welcome, dude. I'm always, always tickled to have you on the show, sir.
Oh, thanks. I love it. And it makes me get an opportunity to pull out these either previously seen gems or matches I'd never seen before. In this case, something I had seen, but it had been a minute.
Yeah, it had been a minute for me too. I think the way this one came about was I was just sort of in the Sting frenzy that I think a lot of us were with the, you know, big old Sting retirement taking place this past week. And man, I just went down a rabbit hole, and, you know, I think if you're talking about Sting's all-time greatest opponents, I mean, for me, it's between Vader, Cactus, and Muda. I mean, what are your thoughts there?
If it wasn't those three, you got to throw...
I mean, Flair, I guess, as Flair, well.
Yeah, exactly.
How did I forget Flair?
Yeah, that's the only name I would have added into your list.
Yeah, but, you know, then I was
like... Oh, I don't know, man. Him and Triple H. Ooh. I think he had some stuff with Seth Rollins for a minute there, which didn't end so well for Sting.
Man,
and
if
yeah.
there is anyone out there to where either of those are their favorite Sting matches, I want to punch them in the face.
Some Ravishing Rick Rude would be a good answer.
Ooh, yeah, I remember that Beach Blast match back in the day. That was that one, wasn't it?
I believe so. And then I think it was always enjoyable to watch Mr. Rick Rude take either a... Manhattan drop or an atomic drop and watch him get all silly, because I love a good bad guy who knows people love it when we look silly.
Oh man, I knew exactly what you were gonna say when you went into that. Like, man, how can a guy be known for his incredible ability of like taking ass-based offense and just selling it really well? It's tremendous.
Like ridiculous levels of like slapstick selling. Like, and Rick Rude, for the most part, he puts it on pretty thick, but a serious character overall. But then you get to see him do this wacky shit. Yeah, it always stands out.
Oh, love it so much. But yeah, so I went into this, and I think the Vader feud was probably, of all of those, the one that's closest to my heart with Sting. I think because similar to like Vader's matches against Flair, he just totally brings something different out of people, you know? Like, just forces them into this, like, next level of physicality and brings a side out that you don't see from a lot of guys. So I feel like a lot of people's, you know, best opponent at that time was Vader, for sure. But I went back, right back to the start for this feud, man. I went back to, apparently, I found out their first ever singles match was actually on... like an episode of Worldwide.
Oh, nice.
Just as like a, it was like the week before.
You at Universal Studios got to see a pretty good match there.
I think it was in Universal Studios. It was in some sort of location that would look like a live taping of some variety. I don't know. But it was right before his, I think, a big title defense he had coming up actually against. Who'd you just say? It's escaping me.
Rick Rude.
Yeah, Ravishing Rick Rude. So it was just sort of like he has to get through the monster Vader first. And it was like a pretty short TV, you know, under 10-minute match. Ended in like a count out or something like that. But it was like fantastic for what it was, dude. And then I like watched all the way through, like basically the whole lead up with all the promos and that and angles leading up to this one, the road to the Great American Bash. And I guess the story was that so they had some house show matches that Sting got, like, I think, like, some broken ribs or something like that in the matches. So then the idea is that...
Did anybody tell Leon it's a work?
Wrestling was better for him not knowing. Maybe not better for his opponents, but better for like getting enjoyment out of the matches, I think.
For sure.
But so then they made that part of the story of the match that basically Sting, who's been this great, you know, champion, this crowd favorite champion, He's going into the match injured.
The baby face is baby face.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Sting. Like, he's like the ultimate baby face guy.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, just his whole look and aura and everything at this point, to me, it's like, it cannot be improved. Like, this is, I mean, actually, I lie. The only thing that can be improved is he hadn't got his amazing Man Called Sting theme music yet. That was the only thing that that could get slightly even better. But yeah, so they're going into this match. Sting is actually like the champion, but the underdog going into this match because he is injured. And Vader has just been built up to be this just destroyer of a dude, and he's with Harley Race now. And man, I forgot like what an incredible pairing Harley and Vader were.
Let's start off with Vader, how incredible he is as far as credible challenger is concerned. Like, I grew up on WWE or WWF at the time, and it was always Hulk Hogan versus the Monster of the Week or whatever it was, but you never, ever, ever considered that Hulk Hogan might lose. Whereas here, any match where Vader was in with Sting, you know, it was pretty good, or whoever he was in there with, he was like, there's a good chance that Vader's going to win, regardless of who he is in the match with.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that's like a bit of a philosophical difference too, because sort of WCW, NWA was always more like, I guess, the heel, perennial heel champion. Like Babyface Chase. Yeah, Babyface Chase. And the heel's basically, the champion, or at least they're booked a lot more strongly. Whereas, yeah, in WWF, it was like everyone's just all right, let's build them up.
We're propping up Hogan regardless.
Hogan beats everybody. Hogan never loses to anybody. And it's just, man, I prefer the strong heel perspective myself. But yeah,
100%. But then you have a guy who's already a strong heel, and then you pair him with someone who's a legitimate badass who could probably beat up a lot of the guys himself still at the point in time.
Oh, for sure.
And
the old dog.
A former champion, which they actually, I appreciate that during the match we watched, they actually put Harley over as a former champion. That would have been totally ignored in the WWE, you know what I mean?
Adds so much to it, adds so much more credibility, I think. And also, I really like the idea of, like, you've got Vader, a dude who's just this fucking monster,
quite young at this time.
I guess he's, what, maybe mid-20s at this point? But he's like this wild sort of like yet to be molded monster, and so the one thing that he was needing was just this being paired with the smart veteran to finally put the pieces together, and then
that who also won't kowtow to the aggression that is Vader. He could actually put him in his place because it's a tough ass bastard like Harley.
Oh man, before we get into this match, like I said, I watched like a bunch of the promos and stuff. The go home WCW Saturday night before this was absolutely incredible. And it mainly, like, I think that has like a really great, you know, wild Vader promo in it as well. But the absolute highlight, dude, was this Harley Race promo, like the go home one, telling Sting how, you know, Vader's going to destroy him and everything like that. It was one of the most unhinged promos I've ever seen. Harley is just spitting into the camera, covered in sweat, wild eyes. Looks like he's going to have a heart attack at any moment. It was something to see, man.
Dude, that's the kind of stuff that back when we were younger, where, oh, this might be real.
Yeah.
this guy is literally freaking out, like, you can't be an actor and get this kind of emotion on the camera unless you're legitimate. But no, these guys pulled it off back in the day.
And like, that's the kind of stuff where anyone would watch that. Like, it's, if I'm watching wrestling and Kaylin walks into the room and she sees that what's on the screen, she'd be like, "What? Who is that crazy old man? And why is he yelling so much?" Like, that's gonna catch anyone's eye, you know.
Yeah, and he's also yelling about another man beating up another man. What? why is he worked up about this?
Oh man, yeah. If anyone has the ability to watch the Go Home Saturday Night on Peacock or whatnot, highly highly recommend it. It was really really great.
I actually watched this on. Somebody had uploaded the match itself onto a Facebook page, so I just watched it on Facebook.
Oh yeah, fair enough. I when I'm looking for these things, sometimes I'll watch the, you know, whatever grimy old one that someone uploaded in probably quite low resolution.
Hell yeah, Google.
Yeah, like Dailymotion or whatnot. Mainly because the one thing, obviously, like your WWE Network or, you know, Peacock or Binge we have in Australia is what it's all on. The quality is actually quite good, like really nice picture, really nice resolution, all of that. But man, there's nothing that's more annoying to me than like a lot of the theme music being slightly tweaked or like dubbed over. Like you never that Sting, you know, Man Called Sting entrance from the WCW Slam Jams. Is that the album?
You know, I actually don't know the title of. I think you're right, but I don't want to say for sure because I don't know.
If not, it's quite similar. But anyway,
someone. Email. Who's ever listening, email us. Tell us we're wrong. No, sure.
Please send a self-addressed envelope.
Exactly. Idiots.
We'll open up the mailbag on next week's episode. Fuck, how good would that be? But yeah,
anytime they would take the music out, like old...
I don't know why they didn't old have ECW the rights stuff. To all of those. Like, because... It's weird.
Old ECW stuff, they had, like, literally everyone was using unlicensed music.
Oh, man. And again, I'm a absolute ECW fanatic. I can't watch any of the stuff on the, you know, the Binge or the network because it's just, like, painful for me to watch it with, like, you know, New Jack's music dubbed over or, like, Sandman or, like, it was, the music was so important to it. WCW, yeah, thankfully...
RVD coming out, not coming out to Pantera would be bizarre, or like in ECW, it would be really weird.
Oh, dude, this is a sidebar, but I was so stoked when he like had his, you know, AEW couple matches. It seems like he's just popping up every now and then, which I think is a good use of him. But the fact that Tony Khan actually licensed Walk by Pantera for his whole thing made me so happy. He didn't have to use that awful theme music that he had in TNA back in the day.
I honestly did not realize how much the One of a Kind song was trying to rip off Walk. Like I never noticed it at all. Then I listened to it the other day. I'm like, holy shit, it's totally trying to rip it off. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, my man, Walk is a great song. But yeah, that's the reason why I'll oftentimes watch the, you know, some shitty low resolution version, just because I'd still far prefer that with the real music as opposed to the dub over. Thankfully, dub situations with this one, as far as I can tell. But in terms of music, how amazing is Vader's theme at this point, and just suiting the whole sort of like monster character of just like, I don't even know, like there's something about his entrance that I just love so much.
Yeah, it really sets the tone of this hulking beast that's going to be heading to the ring. Agreed.
Just this like foreboding kind of like music that's it's just so perfect. And then coming out with that amazing like big mastodon entrance helmet shoulder thing.
You have to say the coolest wrestling accessory of all time, right?
I mean, for sure. And you think it doesn't get cooler than him coming out with like the glowing red eyes and shit. And then he does the entrance bit, takes it off, puts it in the ring, does his pose, and then fucking shoots steam or smoke out. Like,
the thought that went into that is like, all right, you're going to have a sweet helmet that's going to be like an ancient, an elephant monster, a mastodon. And then guess what? That's going to have a remote control that you're going to shoot Steve. And Leon's like, oh, fuck yeah, dude. I bet initially he's like, what? No, look at this thing.
I mean, I swear, I think I read somewhere that New Japan just completely had that made up themselves, you know, for his run. Originally, you know, the Vader character was meant to be played by Helwig, right?
I believe that is the case. Yeah. When I heard that originally, I was like, that is so weird. I'm so glad it went the other way.
Can you imagine what it would have been like if we got Ultimate Warrior as Vader?
Oh, my God. Well, it would have been totally different. Like, it would just be the similar look, but him just doing the Ultimate Warrior thing, I imagine.
I feel like it probably just would have been a failed experiment in reality. 100%. Probably similar to, like, Oz or something.
Oh, shit the bed instantly. Speaking of, actually, real quick, there's an old, awesome WCW comic book, and there's this really kick-ass drawing of Vader and Harley that I need to put on a shirt. It is so fucking awesome.
Damn, yeah, please.
It's a little sidebar there. Yeah.
All of those weird early 90s WCW comic book stuff that I've seen, absolutely incredible. Like that bizarre one that I think that you put on the shirt with Sting and the sick terminal child in hospital.
Oh, God. It's like one of the funniest frames in comic history. If people haven't seen it, it like starts out with this little kid begging for to be cured, essentially, whatever disease he's dying from. And the publicist that is there with Sting says, no, Sting can't do that, but he can make you an honorary Stinger. And the little kid's like, thanks.
Man, I absolutely need to read that comic because I want to see how that works in context. You know, what was the point of this? I mean, it's obviously great, just completely out of context, where you're like, what the fuck? But I really want to be like, all right, in what world did they decide this would be, you know, a good idea?
I want to collect the books as well because there's so many weird scenes. Like, there's this one where all of a sudden it's just Sting and some woman, I'm going to assume it's Missy Hyatt, just dancing. Like, it's like such an 80s looking frame. Sting is wearing some weird looking suit, and I know it was from the 90s, but the fashion looks so 80s, and it's so funny. I want to take so many stills from that book and just put it on shirts, and I don't think anybody can stop me.
I think you're golden. Why not? Yeah. I don't think anyone's taken a careful control over that copyright.
No, but back to Vader's awesome look. You've seen the sweet video where he has a setup in the ring and then Liger runs in and kicks the thing over and runs out of the ring really quick, right?
Little bastard.
He's like, fuck this thing. It was a different Liger outfit. Is that like I think it was the original Liger look.
Yeah, with the red and gold kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's wild how much cooler the Liger outfit got from that first iteration.
Oh, 100%. It's one of the coolest looks ever.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, so many people have Liger tribute gear just because the look is so damn cool, and he just happened to be incredibly awesome.
Did you hear Liger had, like, a mini sort of comeback in CMLL this past week?
Say what?
Yeah, so it wasn't an actual match, but he was there seconding Tiger Mask 4, I believe.
Oh, okay. And well, that's rad.
And he had the full costume, like, full thing, and he actually came in and did a few spots.
What?
With Ultimo Guerrero, I think, or I can't remember who the other guy was working, but yeah, I absolutely need to track this down.
What a treat for anybody who happened to be there. That's awesome.
It was like someone said on Twitter of comparing it to like the AEW use of Liger, where he was holding the belt or something and like MJF shoved him out of the way and you're like, oh, that's a great use of Liger.
Yeah. I still can't believe that when I met him, he threw himself into a headlock for me and to take a picture. I'm like, this is the coolest photo I could ever get. And then initially I was just walking up, hey, I want to get a picture. They go, you got to buy a t-shirt. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then he's like, boom, awesome pose. He's like, wrench it in. So yeah, it's one of the coolest photos.
So
I'm working the wrong side, somebody pointed out. But that maybe was his bad, not mine.
You're just putting on a Mexican style headlock.
Oh, you know what? You're right. We were so close to the border, I got confused. We were in Reseda.
work the right when you're down south of the border, my friend.
Mexico way?
Yeah. Man, I love Liger so much.
Yeah, rad looks. Back to Vader being badass. So yeah, he comes out with his helmet, and I think for a minute there, he actually was looking into selling them, but I guess they were hard to mass produce. And yeah, there were some rubber ones you could buy at one point in time, but I don't know. It's literally the coolest look I've ever seen on a wrestler ever.
Man, I would love to have some sort of weird, Vader Mastodon helmet pencil sharpener or something.
No, Chris, we got to do this. What? I'm going to say it on the podcast, but nobody steal this. Incense burners.
Ooh, shit.
Where the smoke is coming off of both sides of it, or coming off the nostrils or whatever. We got to figure out how to pull that off. Little ceramic Mastodon helmets that are incense burners.
Dude, fuck incredible. Yeah,
that's good.
Either that or I think you could also extend it to like a joint holder that sort of holds your joint while you're not smoking it. I think that could be a good idea. Mm-hmm. Similar to some of like Seth Rogen's sick ceramics stoner accoutrement.
Oh yes. His weed paraphernalia line is hilarious.
I love it so much. But back to these entrances. Yes. So on that helmet thing, do you find it bizarre that like WWF, I mean, he obviously is running WWF, had problems for a variety of reasons, but how, if they weren't able to use the original helmet thing, why didn't they create him another one? How do you have Vader and not have such a cool part of the presentation?
I think they feel they already tried it when they did Mantar, and they weren't going to go down that road again.
All of the good memories of Mantar. Oh, man. But then we have Sting's entrance, and like I was saying, Sting's whole look here, like he's got the sort of like American theme to his outfit because it is Great American Bash. Sure. Amazing jacket with the tassels. He's got.
I think
like
it's the one his son wore on the show this weekend.
Yeah, man, that was such a cool moment. Yeah. But I just thought this whole presentation, Sting coming out, the music, everything. I'm like, this is just the perfect encapsulation of a great, ridiculous pro wrestling babyface. Like,
yeah,
just he had it all.
Honestly, I was. When you look at it, if somebody came out nowadays doing that, you'd be like, you are corny as fuck, bro. But Sting was able to pull it off earnestly without looking like a dork. Like, everyone, when they originally had Kurt Angle come out, you know, he was being the American super rah-rah babyface, and everyone hated it, so that's why he went heel. That stuff doesn't work these days, but Sting could pull it off with ease.
Yep.
No one thought he was, like, over patronizing or anything. He's like, look at Sting being rad in the red, white, and blue.
Yeah, Sting can make patriotism cool again.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have never considered it. I might become a Proud Boy now. I forgot about that.
Man, we're lucky that Sting didn't join the dark side and become like a MAGA supporter. He could have had a lot of power to do a lot of bad.
Bro, come on. You would not be shocked to find out that Sting was a crazy MAGA Republican. I would not be shocked in the slightest.
Well, if he is, I hope he keeps it a secret, because that would make me sad.
I would be very bummed out.
Oh, man. But this whole entrance, like, he just had it all. I'm still convinced, as cool as Crow Sting was, never as cool as Surfer Sting. I'm going to put that out there.
I refuse to call him Surfer Sting, even though I heard him call it that this weekend. I was like, I've never heard him actually address it as Surfer Sting.
Isn't that trippy?
He did, like, and it became it so bizarre. It's like, yeah, Surfer Sting and Crow Sting. I'm like, whoa, he is compartmentalized. Those are different things. But I don't know, man. The Crow Sting, I love Surfer Sting. It's rad, even though he never surfed. But the Crow Sting and the way they built it up and have him wait so long to attack the NWO, it just made him so cool. I have a hard... We all know that neither are better than Joker Sting, if we're being honest.
If only that that scene in Bischoff's office with the crow that is he's getting to stand
so
guard
weird.
Over Bischoff. A trained crow.
Everyone seemed like all of a sudden ironically or not ironically like the Joker Sting when Sting showed back up in TNA. They all seemed like, yeah, that was great. I'm like, no, we all agreed at the time. It was horrible. What are you talking about?
It's one of those funny things where I remember, yeah, at the time, I was like, what the heck is going on? Sting has watched Heath Ledger's presentation of the Joker, and he's just like, maybe I can just be the Joker. And yeah. But it's weird because at the time,
so many wrestlers have chosen to try to be the Joker, and Sting is the most evident and on the grandest stage.
It was just so funny because at the time, you're right. Like, I remember just thinking how much this sucked. But then you see a lot of these days, like, people post old, like, TNA stuff of just little excerpts of, like, the weird fever dream that this was or the nonsense that happened. And you watch it, and just in of itself, you're like, that was actually awesome.
Crazy how the world turns.
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, I definitely love that whole initial Crow Sting introduction and him being the assassin of the NWO kind of thing. And, you know, obviously if that fucking, his big crowning moment wasn't completely fucked over by that piece of shit Hogan, you know, that it would have been a bit different. But I mean, also I will say him coming out to kill them all, that sort of late 90s era, very badass. Mm. I was a big fan of that Sting back in the day, but I just think Surface Sting's like next level. And I think his matches as well, you can't even compare the match quality of Surface Sting versus later Sting. But
For sure. That is 100% accurate. And you know what? The Surface Sting character is such a quintessential babyface, and like it can't be duplicated these days. Like no one can be that happy and positive without people rejecting it. But yeah, Sting is the mold. That is that version of the babyface is what you aspire to be, but people can't do it. Everyone likes Shades of Grey these days.
He was just doing it for his little stingers, man.
Yeah, man. I liked how they say that. Like, the stingers are out here in attendance. And I liked honestly, one of the things that I miss about wrestling is having the announcers literally right there next to the ring. I know it's not safe for them or it gives the wrestlers more room, but I think it's so cool just seeing them sitting there. They get to react if the guys come around them and stuff. And I don't know. I like that.
Dude,
it reminds me of the wrestling.
Speaking of the announcers and the commentary teams, one thing that I found very fascinating, I'm not sure if you caught this because you just watched the match, probably without the, you know, preamble and post or whatever. But yep, they actually had the main commentary team of Jim Ross and Jesse the Body Ventura, which I want to say, I'm just going to put that out there, one of the most underrated great commentary duos of all time. I think that is my favorite Jim Ross commentary team. It's a bit of the side thing there. But they had almost like a secondary analyst team of Tony Schiavone and Magnum TA that were there. They were watching the match too, and they would just cut to them for their thoughts before or after the match as like analysts. So it's almost
that was
like
weird. During this match, they kept showing Tony Schiavone and Ron Simmons sitting together.
Oh yeah, they did
back
that
in
too.
The back crowd, and they showed the back of their heads, like the weirdest choice for a camera shot ever. Like, here, who are these two back of the heads enjoying the show? Well, they told us now it's Ron Simmons and Tony. Why didn't you shoot their faces?
This is probably another thing that makes more sense if you watch it in context. Is before the match, I think they clearly were planting the seeds for, you know, Ron Simmons to be the next big baby face. And
yeah, he's the one who beats Vader, right?
He beats Vader for
the title, yeah.
And, like, you know, Watts has always been a big fan of, like, you know, pushing a, you know, mega black baby face kind of role, like JYD kind of deal. Sure. So I think that's obviously what he was trying to do with Ron Simmons here. But they were making it very clear that he was, you know, had aspirations to be on for this belt beforehand. And so they had this like interview with Ron Simmons before the match, and it was that sort of rah-rah babyface kind of thing, saying how he's so excited to watch the match and whatever, and how, you know, he's looking to be a you know, challenger for whoever wins kind of deal. It was a little bit kind of awkward and just a bit clearly nervous, but I thought overall it was pretty good. But so that's the reason why I think they showed him.
No, I know. I made sense to me why he was watching, even without the any promo. But it was just weird. They shot the back of their heads.
Yeah.
And it was him and Tony Schiavone sitting together. You didn't hear either of them speaking. And now you're telling me that Magnum and TA, Magnum TA and Tony Schiavone were also a part of the broadcast team. And
yeah.
Apparently, what was Magnum just standing to the side while they were watching the show? Like, what's going on?
I guess so. I mean, maybe it was like they were the secondary sort of analyst team, and then we had Ron temporary. I don't know. But I really love it as a concept.
The back of the heads is what really threw me off. I'm like, because initially they shot to it without saying anything, and then Jim Ross and Jesse mentioned who is actually out there watching, so you can know whose back of the heads you're enjoying. Pretty weird.
It seemed like they were having a fun animated discussion when we saw the back of their heads.
Yes, indeed. I also was stoked to see one of my favorite old school referees, Pee-wee Anderson.
Oh my gosh, Pee-wee Anderson is such a bloody great referee, man. He is like, when we get into the match, there's something I'll definitely want to put him over for, but man,
oh, me too. Like I hope it's the same thing, because if it is, I'm going to laugh my ass off.
Probably will be. But man, you watch Pee Wee Anderson, and like, I don't, you know, mean to bury current AEW referees. I do love.
One of them's my friend over there. Be careful, pal.
I absolutely love Bryce Remsburg. I think he's an absolutely incredible referee.
We don't need to do the list.
I'm not naming names. But I just feel no one currently, maybe Bryce aside, can wear the shoes of Pee Wee Anderson. He was just incredible.
And he was animated enough, didn't get into the way a whole bunch, except there was a moment in the match where he literally got in the way. But yeah, I always enjoyed him because he looks like a referee. And he's got the low-key mullet and the sweet mustache. It's just like, yeah. Fucking A. That's a referee right there for you.
Oh, man. And it just feels so legit, you know?
Yep.
Just adds a real extra level of, like, authenticity. I think that's what you need from referees sometimes.
I say more referees should have mustaches. Heck, let's make it a prerequisite for the position.
Dude, if I was running a wrestling company, all of the referees would have sweet curly mullets and mustaches. That would be, you know, part of the uniform.
Yeah, these are my zebras. Enjoy the mullets and moustaches.
In general, if we can just make everyone try to embrace their inner Kenny Powers as much as possible, that's agreed. All we need.
Shout out Nick Patrick.
Nick Patrick, who was like, this is the definition of Kenny Powers as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Dude. But on to this match. From the very start, like, I was, you know, I got into this match and I'm like, all right, I was sort of thinking a bit about, you know, I'm pretty sure this was going to be awesome enough to where it was going to end up being my match of the week. So I was already kind of like thinking about the, you know, visual and everything like that, that I'd end up picking. And man, that starting face off that they have, just like right off the bat, it was one of the sickest, like, face-offs to start a wrestling match that I've ever seen. I was just like, all right, we're done here. This is the moment.
All finished. Yeah, honestly, like, just the look of these two guys, that's like a wrestling match to me. You know what I mean? Like, one guy who looks like he'll do whatever it takes to win a match, and then a guy that it looks like there's no way this other guy is going to be able to fucking beat him. That just, it looks so good.
Yeah, and just like so heated, like it got right back into all the things that they were talking about from the, you know, the setup. And then they strayed into the, you know, classic Vader club strikes all over in the corner. And just like overwhelming him right out of the gate, and going straight to that midsection with the injured ribs or whatever. I was just like, man, this is how it's done.
I thought to myself, like, somebody must have shown Brock Lesnar Vader matches to help him learn how to structure a big man style match, because that's what he does. He just like rushes and overwhelms from out the gate, and that's Vader style to a T.
Yeah, I mean, that is actually really...
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Really good call, because I feel like all of the success of Brock was basically like it was a modern day Vader. That was basically all it was.
Paired with Paul. I mean, you know, I know he's not Harley, but as far as like a smart, old, kind of portly, cantankerous gentleman, that's like fits their aesthetic to a T.
Hey, you know, there's a reason, another similarity between Brock and Vader.
Mm.
They were both trained by Brad Rennigans.
Oh! Mm. That's a detail I was unaware of.
Yeah. I guess from that, both being from Minnesota, or I guess like, you know, Vader breaking in AWA in Minnesota. But yeah, interesting. Brad Rennigans was fucking rad. If you haven't seen him before, I'd highly recommend checking out any of his AWA stuff, where he's done a little bit of New Japan work as well. But back on topic here, I just thought it was so good that like they straight like got into, all right, Sting is fucked up, but he's trying to man it out. And Vader is not having any of that, and he's gone right for the injury, you know?
Yeah. The whole front of the match there at the beginning was all just Sting getting completely overwhelmed. And then he finally got that side suplex.
Oh, man.
And then his next decision was to clothesline Vader out of the ring to give this big man time to rest, which I thought it was a very illogical decision for a babyface. Like, get on this guy, start stomping on him. Don't send him out there to take a breather. It's Vader. What are you thinking?
I actually loved that that spot itself. Like the that fire up, and there's various of them through the match. Every time Sting like fires up and gets in his face and hits a bunch of stuff, it's bloody sick. But yeah, between that backdrop and then like the massive crowd pop after he gives him the clothesline out of the ring. So great. There's another one. Did you note that great combo of the foot stomp, like he stomps Vader's foot and then does the discus punch?
Mm. Yeah, people love this fucking stinger. Like I said, quintessential babyface, can do no wrong. People are crying when he's getting beat up. I just love how so much of this match is just old school wrestling still, even though it's coming to the point where wrestling maybe was verging on change. It's still very old school here. Like when they did the fucking test of strength spot.
Yeah.
And Sting, before he even got into it, was like looking to the crowd whether or not they think he should get involved in this. And he's like, I don't know, guys. Like, not a lot of people go to the fans to get decision making for their moves. I loved it.
I loved it because it was almost like he was torn, right? Like,
100%.
He obviously doesn't want to disappoint his little stingers. At the same time, he knows he's fucked up and Vader is a fucking monster. And so this is probably a questionable idea, but at the same time, he doesn't want to disappoint his loyal fans, so he's torn, man.
And the commentary team definitely put this over like, he's not sure whether he should do this. It was like, I was like, this is old school wrestling at its finest. I fucking love it.
I love it so much. And I guess they did a bit of a repeated kind of thing thinking about it now, but you mentioned you sort of gave Vader a bit of a chance to recoup on the outside. They did that a few times, where it's like Vader was all over him, then he has like a big fire up and ends up with, you know, Vader going out of the ring kind of thing.
Maybe it's really Leon needed breathers and they had those structured in the match to, you know, just make it look legitimate.
Well, it was cool because, like, it gave Vader an opportunity to be like, what the fuck? You know, how has this guy got this, you know, bit of energy and how did that happen? And, you know, Vader's a little bit like, whoa. And then, you know, Harley's there trying to be like, no, you got this, you got this. There was an amazing moment when they're doing that. The cameraman's getting up near, you know, Harley to try to capture that. And then Harley yells at the camera. He's like, what are you doing in my face?
I liked when during the test of strength spot, before they got locked in, Vader like took time to yell at the fans, like, quit trying to influence this guy about what we're gonna do here. I'm trying to do the damn test of strength.
Man, through this, I just thought Vader is just the absolute perfect big man. You know, in terms of just conveying that he is just unstoppable, he's dominant, he's a fucking monster.
He's merciless.
Like, using his size and just the physicality of it. And it's just, I think, perhaps the thing of greatest big man of all time. I think that might be Vader. I think that's him.
The only reason I say Bam Bam is just because I like the entertainment value as well, like the fun. But Vader is a true badass. If it wasn't Bam Bam, it's him. Honestly, his... You know when he does the, not a fence press, but he just jumps forward on the guy and just smashes him with his chest?
Oh, man.
Like, he does it every match? Yeah. Like, I love it. It's such a simple thing to do. You're just literally throwing all your body weight into somebody's chest and doing a little hop. But fucking hey, it's so badass.
And I mean, that's what I mean about him, like, using his size, like, so much to his, you know, get as much out of it as he possibly can. Because you watch that and just, like, relating it to... anything you know about physicality, you're like, that looks like it would hurt very much.
Like, yeah. And it's so sudden, and like, it doesn't take much effort for him to do it. It doesn't appear, so he can like literally do it at any moment, and you're gonna be the ground immediately. Like, there's no stopping it.
He's just running his girth into you at the end of the day.
he in the spot we're just talking about, the test of strength. In fact, he's so merciless that Sting took an opportunity here to actually cheat. He poked the motherfucker in the eye.
He got his inner Ric Flair run. He learned from that series of matches with Flair, my friend.
He thumbed that motherfucker. It was great. I was like, whoa, Sting, you really need to break out all the stops. You're cheating.
But how great was it how much of a pop that got as well?
I know.
The crowd was like, you know what? That, for anyone else, that might be a questionable thing to do, but Sting clearly needs anything he can do right now, so we're okay with it.
The fans are hypocrites, friend. That's what we're saying.
as Jesse the Body would say.
Yeah. I also love, there's a spot, speaking of Jesse, where Vader was doing all his poses in the ring, and he was like, Jesse starts talking about, say, most muscle or double bicep, and Jim Ross was saying, well, he doesn't have a future in bodybuilding. And then Jesse immediately, without a stop, goes, well, there's not much money in it. Like, that had to be planned. How did that come off the cuff? That's amazing.
Oh, I loved it so much. And I loved even more that I'm pretty sure that was a thinly veiled fuck you to Vince and the
WBF,
the failing World Bodybuilding Federation.
The good old WBF.
Man, not enough people talk about Vince's spectacular failures, I feel.
Ico Pro. The XFL.
Man.
Being a generally acceptable human being. He fails on so many things, Chris.
All these assholes touting his successes. I want to see more people talking about his spectacular failures.
Yes, indeed. What's it called? Astro Pros, or what is Super Astros?
Oh yeah, that shitty attempt to counter the WCW Cruiserweight division.
Yeah. Oh man. No. Since his career's over and we're discussing this match here, I want to put over how tremendous of a seller Sting is.
Oh my god.
He is such a great babyface in peril. It's ridiculous. Back to him being the quintessential babyface, but this guy sells agony so well. He always looks like he is dying out there when he needs to look like he's dying. It's so good.
He does such a great combo of looking like he's on death's door and like completely committing and emoting that selling, but not in like a sort of contrived sort of like really overly fake looking kind of way that you see a lot of
people. Yeah, he's not looking in the camera. He's not looking in the camera and begging for people. No. And then just his staggering sells of punches, like where, you know, you look, oh, the guy's about to fall down. He's staggering and stumbling around. So good. So good.
It's like, you know, that's a big staple of the sort of WWE style, I guess. Like, you've got to emote to the camera and all that sort of bullshit, and it being so over the top that it just kills the actual any feeling of legitimacy to it. Whereas this, I feel, this is the perfect balance, you know, where he's doing this emoting and selling spectacularly, but I don't know what it is, but he's doing it in a way to where I don't feel like it's a complete crock of shit and like an idiot for watching it, you know?
Agreed.
And then he, like, immediately combines that with, again, like I was saying before, some of the best, like, comeback fire spots that you will ever see.
Yeah, like, there's coming up here, I guess we can move to this part. There was a series of moves that he was fired up. He was punching and doing, like, a back arm or back elbow.
Classic Sting.
Classic Sting, which Jim Ross called as martial arts style blows.
Sting did have a, you know, he went over and worked a bit in Japan, so he learned the martial arts skills. Maybe he trained with those monks in the mountains that we were talking about from the World Class episode.
And then he does the rolling, like, somersault, like, it's like a somersault senton kick thing, and Jim Ross calls it a rolling karate kick.
I had a note about that. I laughed it so much when he called it a rolling karate kick. I mean, I popped because yeah, that was, you know, the classic Liger Koppo kick. And the idea of Sting breaking that out, there's a lot of stuff we see here that's like forgotten amazing Sting offense. He also did like an amazing almost like Bad News Allen or like a Noki style like brain kick, like a really sweet, like, you know, that kind of floating enziguri kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So much cool Sting offense that I completely forgot about, and for some reason he like dropped it over the years. I don't know.
That rolling karate kick is, there's a famous gif of him doing against Bull Mastino or Mastino, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but old school Kane from WCW. But it looks like Sting defies gravity because as he's rolling forward, he hits Kane and kind of like pauses in air before he hits the mat. And the video is not slowed down at all. You've probably seen it before.
This. It's tremendous. And he also, it's looks so like weird, he murders him with it as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, how the fuck did he? Sting, you're amazing. How do you do it?
Man.
There's an awesome part where Sting got Vader on his shoulders when Vader had climbed up the ropes. Oh. And I didn't know at this time that it was a DQ, or I've forgotten, to jump off the top rope. So you're like, what is this Vader doing? This is ridiculous. Totally illogical, guy. But luckily enough, Sting stopped him from making this grievous error. And when Sting pulls him over into the corner, like he can barely hold him up, but he started, I guess, stinging out where his like eyes kind of like rolled in the back of his head. And he started looking so crazy before he dropped him into this Samoan drop. I was like, that is so hilarious. I don't remember Sting ever doing crazy eyes to do any of his moves. I could definitely see him do some crazy shit with his face, but not like,
I love that so much. He was like bugging out. He was like shaking, man. And it was like great as well, because it was sort of, you know, obviously selling his
heavy this motherfucker is.
And, you know, the injury going into the match. But also, he's just, like you're saying, a fucking massive motherfucker that he's got on his shoulders. And Sting, again, you say about Sting's great selling, like Sting selling the struggle of, like, I was really expecting that he was going to do the spot where he sort of crumples to the ground and Vader, you know, falls on him. But no, he hit it. He hit this fucking great Samoan drop. Man, that was such a great spot.
And Jim Ross, I think, called it a slam.
I mean, I guess anything can be a slam.
I just think it's funny how, like, nowadays people will be like, oh, and the Samoan drop. But yeah, back then, no one cared about move names. It was like, Andy slammed him to the mat. Very accurate, Jim Ross.
What a maneuver.
Yeah. Oh, that's the best one. Because what a maneuver. I don't know how to explain
it. It works. It works. If ever you don't know a name of a move, what a maneuver, folks.
All right. So coming up here is where I thought was the most awesome thing that Pee Wee Anderson did.
Mm-hmm.
So are you ready for it?
I am. I have this like exact same note that you do.
There was a ref bump in this match, but the ref bump knocked him down for literally 1 second. It prevented the count from 1 second. Is that what you saw?
Yeah, and I thought that was so good because we're so used to, again, like this over-the-top bullshit of like the referee taking like a little whatever, and then they're down selling like a dead fish for like what feels like 6 years. Again, like I talk about how much I hate a lot
of... That bump, anybody else would have sold forever with the particular. He got 2 feet to his face. You think he would have been like... down for an hour.
Yeah, I mean, especially if we're talking about in a current like AEW refereeing, they would, you know, take 6 years and look like the biggest goon. And whereas Pee Wee here, I thought this was the greatest ref bump I have ever seen because of the legitimacy of it. Right? It's like he's not going down for 6 years. He clearly got like. Took like a bit of a kick when accidentally when Vader was trying to get Sting up, and then it was just long enough for him literally to be 1 second behind on the count, and that was all it took for Vader to kick out of that German suplex.
So
and
good.
The fact that it was like done with a little bit of subtlety, I think just made it so much more effective. I would love to see more of that kind of stuff in current wrestling.
What a badass Pee Wee Anderson is. Everyone else down for the rest of the match. They would have had to call in another referee, Chris.
Little Nate sprinting down the aisle.
Mate, was Mark Curtis the Brian Hildebrand still wrestling or referee?
Oh, Brian Hildebrand was a fantastic referee as well.
Yeah. If those little guys were great referees, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think WCW in general had some terrific referees.
Agreed.
So yeah, absolutely loved that bump spot. And then I thought what would come next was such a clever finish to... 'Cause one of the magical things about this match, obviously a big part of it was it's getting over Vader as, you know, this indestructible monster and, you know, it's his big title win. So this is where you need to get over Vader. But I thought they did such a good job of doing it in a way that didn't make Sting look weak or look any worse. If anything, he looked better coming out of this. And because as Sting hits the big Stinger splash and then he kicks Vader off into the corner. So he's... takes the buckle front first, so he's facing it, and then Sting runs in to give the big Stinger splash to his back, but he overshoots it, clocks himself on the corner turnbuckle, like the bar thing that connects the turnbuckle to the post.
We call them ring posts in the business, Chris?
Well, the ring post is the actual post. But touche.
Also, fucking the referee totally caught Sting blading, like they didn't even turn around away at all. Luckily enough, it wasn't a close up, but yeah.
I thought his timing on that blade job was pretty darn great. I mean,
he only had a small window
doing it, but he was just like, "Yep, quick, get to work, boom, boom, boom." Came out bleeding.
He only had a few seconds to take care of it, and then instantly, Jared, I think Sting's bleeding. I was waiting for blood to start dripping down to the mat because I knew what was going on. I'm like, all right, where's that blood at? Where's that blood?
It's funny how we sort of look for the blade job now in certain things.
Yep, the magic is gone, friend.
But I bloody love a bit of juice in my wrestling. I think it just brings it to the next level. And I thought this, again, for Sting, you know, having to not look weak, but, you know, he's putting over Vader. I thought they did it in such a great way. Because he does that, and you think, oh no, this is where he's going to lose. He still gets the kick out, and then going into that fantastic, big power bomb that just crumples
nasty
him.
Nasty power bomb onto his right shoulder. This is nasty shit, man.
And right coming back to that midsection and the ribs, it's obviously going to target that. And then the pin that Vader executes for it, he just reefs him in one of the tightest, most convincing, proper pin holds that I've seen.
Showing some respect to Sting, making it look like I still have to hold this motherfucker down with all my might because this is Sting. He may kick out.
And it was such a good pin because it's like, you look at it and you're like, a guy the size of Vader and as strong as Vader reefing a pin like that, so tight, ain't nobody kicking out of that.
Nope. And the fans were stunned, honestly. They were shocked that this was a title change.
Oh, man. And it was so perfect as well, the way they stayed with the post-match element of it and just Sting realizing that he'd lost the belt. And the sadness, and then the other wrestlers coming in to pat him on the back and help him up and all that, and them being shocked and sad for him too, and the commentary coverage of it too, and saying how they were had this such a solemn, sad kind of tone to it, almost like it was a big boxing match or something, and the favorite who's been perennial champion has finally lost and everyone's shocked. I just thought the whole thing was treated so well.
Yep, agreed. And because it's a big deal, have your biggest babyface drop in the title, big deal. And they put it over nicely. You can't get a more credible challenger for any world championship than Vader. They tried it again with him and Hogan. It's just a beast.
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about Vader. But did your the version that you watched, did it have the post-match analysis of Tony and Magnum after they cut over to them after going away from Sting in the ring?
Sadly, I did not.
Oh man, Magnum sold it so well. He just had the saddest look on his face, and he just put over Sting as in defeat. And added so much credibility to it. And then they cut to backstage with Vader and Harley celebrating in the locker room. Again, just one of the most unhinged things. Vader's just so happy and wild. Oh, man, it just brought me so much joy.
That's awesome. Were they popping bottles?
They should have been. That's the only thing I think would have made it better, if Harley was pouring champagne over him or something.
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, Harley is just such a cantankerous bastard. I wasn't familiar with his NWA work when I first started watching WCW, so I just knew him as this old badass. But I knew he was one of those guys where he doesn't appear like you want to fuck with him. Even though Vader's there and could probably kick somebody's ass for him, he probably would want to handle it himself. That's the kind of Harley Race attitude.
Yeah, he'd probably, and put a thumb in your eye socket or something.
Exactly.
Shank you when you're not looking. Man, he also, as a manager, took some crazy bumps for a dude that had the amount of injuries from his career that he did. So yeah. Really, really selfless in terms of selling for the baby faces and just being everything that a great manager should be. I never hear talk, when people talk about greatest managers of all time, it's always Bobby Heenan, Jim Cornette, Gary Hart. I think Gary Hart is absolutely an amazing manager, but I feel like there should be more talk for Harley, for how great of a manager he was.
I have to agree. And then you're talking about him being selfless. Some of the bumps he used to do back in the day were so funny, where he looked like a jackass doing them, but especially watching a badass like Harley doing something so silly. Yeah. That one where he falls out of the ring and keeps his feet on the bottom rope, so he's hanging upside down.
Oh, classic.
How did you even think to do that? That is so funny.
That's a classic Terry Funk bump as well, actually. Yeah. And then they're stuck And then it's normally like the baby face will come over and then kick their feet. So then they like fall on their head on the outside. So you get double
the
bump.
You get two bumps. Yeah.
So good. I just love that old like corny kind of like pro wrestling magic, you know? Like there's big crazy slow motion kind of like bumps or, you know, like when a baby face hits like a punch and then like the Bobby Heenan kind of like just jump back sell. Oh. It's part of the magic.
It's such a beautiful art form. Yeah.
Yeah, man. But I enjoyed this match so much. I was almost going to pick it as my match of the week again for this week. Like, just keep going with the same match for a whole month. But then then we ended up having a tremendous pay-per-view that was AEW Revolution. And there were like three or four just barn burners of matches on that. So I was like, man, as much as I want to just keep saying this match and just doing more out of this one match, I have to move on, sadly.
Oh, man. Yeah. Revolution. Revolution was a super rad show.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be top notch and it did not disappoint.
It was honestly, I think, one of the greatest AEW pay-per-views they've ever put on. Like, I can't think of a pay-per-view that had that consistent a match quality, like match after match between, you know, the Danielson Eddie Kingston one that I absolutely loved so much, but then that FTR Blackpool Combat Club tag, which was incredible too, the obviously the insane Takeshita Osprey match, that fucking El Generico top rope brainbuster. Holy shit, dude! and then obviously the, you know, big Sting actual retirement. I thought that was absolutely perfect. I don't think you could have made that better than how it ended up. I thought that was just such a perfect way to end the Sting story.
Agreed. Another spot I gotta take a moment to put over was Roddy doing the backbreaker to the top rope on Cassidy and almost sending him flying out of the ring. I was like, whoa, fucking bananas.
That was a great match, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm excited to see what they do with Roddy and this title. I hope it's not just a transitional champion. But that was really, really good.
I love that so much. It's almost like early on, they were doing more of a comedy shtick with Roddy, but then now he's like being treated as a bit more of like a serious heel. And I think it's all the whole presentation is all the better for it.
The mustache and the glasses are really setting the look off at this point. He looks so like falling down Michael Douglas. He reminds me of that. Like he's gonna break at any moment and kill everybody.
Nice. I also loved in that Orange Cassidy Roddy match that it was like the ending like portion was just Roddy systematically destroying Orange in every way.
Yeah. Roddy is legitimately one of the best wrestlers in the business. And it's awesome that he gets to show it. And then the return of Kyle. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So good.
Tremendous. But, like, we're finishing off, what were your thoughts on the big Sting retirement send-off?
I thought it was handled incredibly. I loved his kid showing up dressed as him, even though that anywhere else that could seem incredibly corny, but in professional wrestling, that's like, that's fucking rad. Make me want to tear up. His son is wearing his face paint.
Did you have a moment as well where like there was a bit of a double take? You're like,
oh yeah, when he first came out, I'm like, oh, he actually did it. He did bleach his hair. They were smart to do that first because a lot of fans were hoping that he was going to even revert back to that look. Which
I was hoping for that personally, but I think
that would have been insane for this man to bleach his hair at this age. He looked like Ric Flair, and his hair is so thin, he doesn't want to do that. But so this was the best facsimile we could have is Sting's son's dressed as. I did a fucking a little edit of that picture where I put the Avengers, you know, the rings that come up during Endgame where they come through when they show up from the other world. I put those around Sting's son's and I put Stingers Assemble. I popped both of his kids real big, so that was awesome.
So good. Those kids sound like the nicest people. I read an excerpt of the one who played Surfer Sting. He has like some video game channel or something.
Yeah,
and he was just like talking about sort of the preparation for doing this and like this like gnarly like cut that he was on to make sure that he like physically could look the part of Surfer Sting as much as he could, and how seriously both him and his brother took like the Stinger splash bit that they were doing, and just how much they wanted to like live up to their dad's legacy kind of thing and just not fuck it up. And it was just so heartwarming.
Yeah, the pictures they got of them doing the Stinger splash, I think his name is Garrett, the one who played Surfer Sting. He has this rage face on, like a battle face, and it's so great. But then you show Steven, the other son, and he's got the biggest cheese eating grin on his face as he's flying through the air. And I don't blame him. I would be like, holy shit, I'm Wolfpack Sting flying through the air on the Young Bucks on a pay-per-view. Like, how can I not fucking smile? Yeah, it was so good. Those guys were living the dream. Yes.
Yeah, and that pre-match video that they did as well with him sitting in the old cinema and everything, and like looking, watching the old footage and the photos that they got from PWI.
Very well done. Very well done.
I actually like welled up like while watching that like pre-match kind of thing and looking at like the look on Sting's face. And yeah, I actually like just about cried.
I don't blame you, man. Yeah. Very emotional moment.
And then obviously the match was just nuts. Originally, I remember thinking like, of all people, I don't understand why he like picked the Bucks kind of thing. Like I was thinking like, oh, you know, I feel like FTR with like the reverence that they have for that kind of thing, they would have been so much better opponents. But all said and done, I think they made the absolute right call. The Bucks, like, were the perfect, like, shit-eating bad guys, the perfect foils for, like, Sting and Darby, and I just thought this whole thing was absolutely perfect. And even that gnarly, you know, Darby bump into the glass, I thought was
so fucking crazy.
But it made so much sense, you know, for the match, because you needed something big to take Darby out for like 10 minutes or whatever it was. So when he did come back, it gets a massive pop. So it made all the sense in the world. I didn't in any way understand the bad faith critics criticizing, you know, that one.
Yeah, especially ones who probably on the same note love Mick Foley getting thrown off the cage.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, I agree. I know we're agreeing a lot on this show, but I agree with the choice for their opponents, not just because I love the Young Bucks, but because, sure, a heartwarming moment where people had a wrestling match out of respect is fine and good. But a match where two guys on the last match of a guy's career beat two pieces of shit in a match of the guys who run the company are those pieces of shit, I think that is a more celebratory for the crowd as well as those wrestlers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like as much as I would have, you know, loved FTR versus Sting and Darby tag, it would have been or would have needed to be more wrestling focused. So I think, you know, obviously at this stage of life and in his career where Sting's at, what they ended up doing, obviously we got a lot of like smoke and mirrors and that kind of thing, but I think it was very clever in terms of they sort of at no point was Sting exposed, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Protected him well. Yeah, and one of the comments, like you mentioned about bad faith, I saw somebody said, it doesn't even make sense there's glass in the match. Like, why would there be glass underneath the ring? And I'm like, because the guys in the match knew there was a wrestling match coming up where they wanted to put people through glass and punish them. That's why, dumb shit. Like, they planned shit ahead.
They clearly got in before the show, snuck it under the ring. What's so surprising about that? Are you saying there's not a precedent in wrestling for people hiding shit under the ring?
Yeah, like, these are the same people who probably never question while there is a myriad of kendo sticks underneath every wrestling ring. Like, we just store kendo sticks under here? Like, what the fuck?
You think they're okay with every fucking Triple H match there's somehow being a sledgehammer under here?
This is weird!
You'd think that the referees would have learned to be like, hey, you know what? We're actually going to check under the ring before this match starts, because he's been hitting people with a lot of sledgehammers lately. No?
Like, do we use a sledgehammer to put the ring together? They must. We're not part of ring crew. What do we know?
Man, so dumb.
A lot of tables under here. A couple of ladders under here. Not sure what's going on.
It's the magical world of wrestling. Shit ends up under the ring. And, yeah. But I thought the whole thing was so great. And I really like that, I thought it was quite important that Darby was a key part of it, because I think it was... There's no way that you wouldn't have Sting and Darby winning in the end. You know, I heard a lot of people being like, oh, you know, Sting wants to put over the other guys or whatever. It just wouldn't have been the same feel-good moment. And I think this did such a great job of, like, putting over Darby as well, more than anything.
Yeah, make imagine Sting losing on his retirement night, like, after they put it all over. Oh, my God, that would have been so... Yeah. The worst booking decision in the longest time.
Yeah, but I thought they hit it out of the park. I thought it was an amazing pay-per-view. My match of the week, since we're recording this a day later and the next one's gone up, I can tell everyone it was a hard decision, but I ended up going with the Danielson Eddie Kingston one for my match of the week. Nice. And everyone will be able to hear my reasoning behind that next week.
Beautiful. Speaking of that, Danielson and Ospreay, man, how killer is that going to be? Holy shit.
Oh my gosh. That's like one of those last bits of fruit left on the vine, you know, of this Danielson dream match thing that he's been doing. That's the last one where it's like, oh man, that's the one we haven't gotten.
Delicious.
I think I'm more interested in that than I think any Ospreay match that you could possibly do. I'm so beyond excited about that.
Yeah, agreed. Will's particular wrestling style may not be for a lot of people, but I think he's good enough where he can match metal with Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson.
You did it again.
I may or may not did that one on purpose.
Old habits die hard.
We'll never know. We'll never know.
No. But the thing with Ospreay, and again, you get a lot of people who give him a lot of shit. He, when it gets down to like the actual wrestling element, like outside of people still think he's just like a spot monkey high spot dude, like Ricochet or something. It's like he is so much more than that. And like you just have to look at like his amazing series of matches with Zack Sabre Jr. You know, like he can match the best of them when it comes to that. So that's another reason why I'm so excited about this this one with Danielson.
Yeah, it's actually one of the few matches when I heard about it, I legitimately got excited. I've seen so much wrestling where I'm like, oh, that'll be cool. But I was like, oh, shit, I didn't even consider.
Yeah, we have some tremendous stuff by the looks of it coming up this year in AEW. I hope they can continue. They seem to be on a real uptick of momentum lately, and just putting together some great wrestling and not as much like hokey bullshit. So I don't know, fingers crossed that direction continues from me. I think
all the matches that are potential for Okada, especially with him positioned in a heel position, oh man, that lot of fun that could happen there. Okada and Kingston, dude.
I didn't even think about that.
Oh, man. Dude.
Yeah, very excited. A lot of big things on the horizon. I don't think there'll be any shortage of matches of the week in the near future. All right, man. Do you have some plug skis? I think it's time to shut this baby down.
All right. Yeah, you can follow me on social media at James Vanderbeek, JAIMS Vanderbeek. That's on Instagram and Twitter. You can probably search the same thing to find me on those other subpar social media sites like Threads or Blue Sky. Also, you can watch and listen to me on IWTV. We have a show tomorrow night. I'm not sure if this will be making the airtime, but Friday we have When Nature Calls on IWTV featuring the title match between our current champion, Derek Jaws, the former champion, Malcolm Flex, and Carl Randers, as well as a new challenger, Casey Rasselhoff. So a lot of excitement going down Friday night on IWTV. So check it out.
That sounds like a lot of fun. I would highly recommend that to everyone. And if you're in the area, in where is it, in Tacoma?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're in the Tacoma area, I'd recommend getting on down and seeing this in person. Nothing
swing
matches
on by.
The live experience.
Yeah, you could hear me say funny jokes about slams.
you can give Jeremy a high five.
Oh, as long as you've Purell'd.
You're one of those, like, fave workers. You, like, shake the fan's hand and then, like, out-sanitize your hand while you're looking at them in the eye.
Yeah, I run to the back real quick and say, last time, actually, during my entrance, I made the decision to do the Vader or the Sid fist bump because I was wearing a Sid shirt. And then after I started doing it, I'm like, oh man, I have to do this to every person in the front row. That's a lot of fist bumping.
Did you feel like Sid in that amazing entrance where he's just fired up and just fist pumping left and right?
Yep, so that's 100% what I was going for. I was like, with each one, I was going, boom, boom, boom.
There's something to be said about Sid, just like the Sid Vicious name, like just take straight up jacking it from the Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols, right?
Yep.
Was it Sex Pistols or Clash?
It was Sex Pistols. Yeah.
Pistols. But, I mean, second only to, again, bringing it all back to Sting. It's like, you know what? Sting, the musician of the Police fame, doesn't need to be the only Sting. Wrestling can have a Sting too.
No, actually, Sting, the wrestler, owns the rights to the Sting name, and Sting, the singer, has to pay him $1 annually for it.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
What a factoid.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? He could ask for more, but Sting's like, nah. Just $1 is fine.
How did that work since he had pre-existing use?
He probably went for this. Sting Gordon from the Police probably did not pursue the copyright on the name as a performer, Sting. And so because the other Sting did.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. All right.
You learn something new every day on this podcast.
We do. We're more than just a couple pretty faces. We give you intriguing tidbits.
Sting facts.
Sting facts. I've been listening to so much Police this week, basically as part of my post Sting retirement come down.
That is awesome. I love synchronicity. I am actually, in no bullshit, a fan of the Police.
Synchronicity is a fantastic song, and the entire album, that's the one I've actually been listening to the most, but very good stuff. Would highly recommend it if anyone feels like embracing Sting here in the post-retirement days alongside us. But thank you again for coming on, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you also to Social Suplex, the team for keeping the lights on here, giving me the opportunity to do this little old wrestling art show. Thank you to y'all, the listeners, for tuning in and bearing with us while we talk nonsense for an hour and a half. I always appreciate that. You can keep up with the show at on my socials at Chris Things on the Twitter, at Chris Things on the Instagram. You can also see my wrestling art stuff on there while you're at it. ChrisThings.com.au if you would like to procure some of that art. Maybe even get a little old commission going. I think that'd be pretty sweet. I'll direct you to check out my latest Sting shirt.
That's so funny.
Celebrating this feud between Sting and Vader and their road to the White Castle, where Sting is talking to Jim Ross and he is dressed for the occasion.
Yeah, it's fucking tremendous. Thanks, you think that's, dude, Dusty's fur?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's either Dusty's or Magnum's from that great promo that they cut, where for no apparent reason they're both wearing rocking ridiculous fur jackets. Oh, man. So, yeah, if you'd like to get yourself one of those shirt skis, or at least check it out again, christhings.com.au. But I think that is enough for us here. Thanks again for tuning in, everybody. I have had a lot of fun.
Peace.
See ya.